Tell me how your interest in Mars and some of these anomalies came about.
Well, I've always been fascinated by Mars because, as some people know, it's the most similar planet to Earth in our solar system, and it has an interesting history as well. People have long believed that there might have been life on Mars, and it's always been an interesting place because it's not that far away from us, and it's very much like the Earth. And so just in the course of study, working in the weapons and aerospace field, there are a lot of things you learn by studying other worlds and the physics involved in spaceflight that can teach you a lot about the systems you're working on. So it was just a natural outgrowth of my interest in spaceflight in general and seeing if there was life in the universe. It was a very interesting question.
What were some of these objects that you started to see originally that kind of perked your interest?
Well, the one that really caught my attention was when they released the first picture of all the little spherules, the blueberries, as they called them. And I noticed that the image that NASA released had very poor contrast. If you downloaded the images themselves from the NASA site, they actually were quite sharp. And after looking them over, I discovered that many of these spherules, or blueberries, are actually the fossilized remains of very primitive aquatic organisms. And it turns out that Mars was indeed covered by an ocean. So we found seashells, sea urchins, and trilobite fossils. And after that, the findings came very rapidly. And I also have to make a nod to Richard Hoagland on one thing. You know, I heard that he was a little unhappy that I hadn't given some acknowledgement to the discovery of the crinoid early on in the opportunity images.
Ah, okay.
And, I didn't, he and I work independently. We don't have any connection whatsoever. And so
right.
Anything that we study happens to be, just out of the can, whatever we find on the NASA site. And it's quite possible that he found the crinoid and published it first. It wouldn't surprise me in the least because most of my efforts had been dedicated to the urchins and the coral and the other things earlier on. So, in all fairness, I have to admit it's quite possible that he found that crinoid before I did.
Well,
we've got a wonderul crinoid from Spirit on Sol 343 on my site as well.
What's fascinating is as you share similar views on some of these anomalies on Mars, and I find that fascinating, you being a scientist and Richard, of course, being a researcher, that eventually I think you guys are going to mesh in terms of, I think, theoretical approach to what could be on Mars.
Well, understand that I have a completely different viewpoint about intelligence on Mars. I see very strong supporting evidence for oceans not too different from what our world's oceans were like many millennia ago.
Sure.
We definitely have aquatic fossils everywhere, and NASA has recently admitted that, yes, Mars was indeed covered by oceans. And it's interesting because you would think that that would have gotten some major news or press coverage. But they really, they said it, but they kept it very low key. So people really aren't aware of the fact that Mars was a water world, very much like our own. What's interesting is that Mars remains wet today. The water didn't simply vanish. A great deal of it is locked up as permafrost or glaciers, but there's also quite a bit of it in the soil still in liquid form, in the form of brine, because of all the salts that are present. If anybody looks at the water features on my pages, you'll see that there are many things that show the flow of water has created them. And in one case, you can see where one of the instruments of the rover, the Mossbauer spectrometer, was pressed against the sand and it leaves a circle. Some people have mistaken it for something that looks like a CD. In one particular case, on Sol 126, you can see the Mossbauer head has mud stuck to it, and you can see where it peeled out of the ground, and the mud actually bulged when the Mossbauer was pressed up against it. And so it's very clear that the soil is wet now. It's not, dusty and dry, as people claim.
If you ever have time, get up to Richard's website, enterprisemission.com, Sir Charles. He's got a new picture up there of what he calls a robotic head, and it is amazing. I saw it at a conference a few weeks ago in Joshua Tree, California, and I got to tell you, this thing is uncanny. I mean, it looks like the head of a robot on the surface of Mars, picture taken by the Apollo 17 astronauts.
Well,
and it is
head, right?
On the moon, rather, yes.
Yeah.
And it has got to be one of the most bizarre pictures I've ever seen.
Well, it's easy to find very interesting-looking things. It wouldn't surprise me that we could find a number of things that look like anything we can imagine. The trick is to find many, many representative copies of something before you can say, yeah, that's very likely what you think it is. If you find one artifact or one item that appears to be something. It's very possible that it could simply be a trick of light and shadow. It's only really easy to confirm if you have multiple shots from many angles. You can assemble three-dimensional views, so you have some means of confirming that the dimensionality of the object matches what you think it is. In the case of the fossils, we literally have hundreds of fossils that you can look at and see features that are, you know, impossible to create through mineral means, such as five- and tenfold remote rotational symmetries. Crystals don't grow in fives. They grow in twos, threes, fours, and sixes. And so little things like that stand out when you find the fossils. They have features that you won't find in minerals.
Well, with this planet then, Mars, being so laden with these fossils, why in God's name won't NASA make an announcement?
Well, you know, I've had a number of thoughts about that. Some people claim that the Brookings Institute report, you know, the claim that you shouldn't reveal the discovery of alien life to people because it'll cause like a religious uproar,
yeah,
or changes in society, and perhaps, although I think that, you know, people are a little more sophisticated than that. You know, half of every movie we see is about aliens in space, and people accept it very easily. I think a more practical answer to that question would be, you know, NASA has about $15 billion a year roughly in funding. And when you do something like this, it pulls the rug out from under many of the planned missions and the instruments that they're going to send, and it could take 5 to 10 years for that to settle down. So we could be talking about, you know, $75 to $150 billion being influenced over the next decade by these findings. And I can see where it would cause a great deal of controversy and a lot of upset. Think of the people who built their careers on the research they've done and the proclamations they've made about their findings and how a lot of that would be disproven.
So you're also saying then that we may have plans, spacecraft, design that probably don't even have the capabilities as they go look for life. We already know, let's say, there's life on Mars. It throws them right out the window.
Well, yes, and consider the following. They've often billed this, the Mir or the rover mission, as the fall of the water. Yet neither of the rovers has any sensor for water whatsoever. Neither rover can detect liquid water. Neither rover can detect humidity or moisture in the soil. So neither one of the rovers has the ability to actually detect water, even though they're on a follow-the-water mission. But even more interesting, neither rover has the ability to identify any organic compound whatsoever.